You're listening to Succeed, Just Let Go, the podcast that'll change how you think and change your life. I'm Willie Horton and I'm a psychologist, been helping people change their lives since 1996, broadcasting from the French Alps, and delighted to have you along. Let's take this week's step in the right direction.
You may, or it's actually more likely that you may not, have noticed that we are all addicts in one way or another. As I say, you may not have noticed that because most people are unaware. We've talked before about normal, crazy people and how they are not all there. And I mean that literally by virtue of the fact that their mental energy, if I can use that phrase, is either dwelling on the past, because it is the past that the brain's automatic pilot uses to enable us make it through the present, or another aspect of the drain on normal crazy people's mental energy is that it is off worrying about the future to the point that very little of them is actually psychologically and mentally present. So they're not all there. And most people, as a result, are unaware that they're not all there. So it's a double whammy. But let me come back to the point that I started with a moment ago. We are all addicted in one way or another. Now, some addictions are more obvious than others simply by virtue of the fact that they are more prominent in social consciousness. For example, alcohol addiction. Everybody has heard of Alcoholics Anonymous. And many people will be aware of just how addictive alcohol can be. In the same way, addiction to tobacco, or indeed addiction to other drugs that you sniff or smoke. We're all aware of those addictions. But what we may not be aware of is the extent to which we are addicted to addicted to a way of existence that enables us make it through the day without actually experiencing our lives at all. Now, I don't need to explain what I've just said, because I explained it a couple of minutes ago when I explained how the normal mind isn't present. Because of the way we psychologically developed from an evolutionary perspective, and indeed from an individual developmental perspective during our childhood, we're all addicted to thought. We're all addicted to the thoughts without which the automatic pilot cannot operate. Now, the key question for starters is, do you need the automatic pilot to enable you make it through the day? And the short answer to that is no. There's obviously a much longer answer to that, in that we need to, wean ourselves off how the automatic pilot abuses us on a daily basis. But what we actually need to do is wean ourselves onto experiencing more and more of the reality of the moment. And that means that we wean ourselves off the thoughts from the past that enable the automatic pilot operate in the present. And we wean ourselves off our addiction to thinking forward, to getting ahead of ourselves, to ultimately worrying about the future. But addictions come in all shapes and sizes. You may not have noticed that we are creatures of habit. And I say you may not have noticed, again, by virtue of the fact that, generally speaking, we are unaware people. But I know people, I know plenty of people with whom I've worked over the last 28 years who are, for example, this is going to sound weird, addicted to eating the wrong foods, even though they know the wrong foods are slowly killing them. I'm talking in particular about a couple of people with whom I've worked over the years who were dietitians suffering from diseases that were exacerbated by what they were eating. And it is like as if, well, at least I met them first, that they couldn't help themselves when it came to eating the wrong food. They were habituated to eating the wrong foods, even though they knew scientifically, they knew conceptually, they knew in their heart and soul that they should stop eating those foods. They literally couldn't seem to help themselves. It's exactly the same thing as people who are smokers. The evidence is abundant in relation to what smoking does to us. And yet people cannot help themselves when it comes to stopping smoking. What I mean by that, for starters, is that they will seek someone else's help. You don't need anyone else's help to break a bad habit. And that's really what I want to talk about in this particular episode. You will have heard, it's kind of a common fallacy, actually, that it takes 21 days to break a habit. As far as I'm aware, there is no research in relation to that. It's a little bit like how everybody believes that you need 5 portions of fruits and vegetables a day to have a healthy diet. There's no scientific evidence behind that either. Believe it or not, the 5 a day idea came from a marketing campaign run by the American agricultural industry in the 1950s. In other words, it was a gimmick at the time. It has entered common folklore, if I can put it like that. And there are plenty of other misconceptions that people have in relation to what they should or shouldn't be doing as well. But the one I wanted to dwell on is the idea that it takes 21 days to break a habit. It's not true. That's not true. Habits are something that we obviously do automatically as a result of the way in which our automatic pilot operates. If we look back at developmental psychology, you will understand that a child becomes habituated within the first few days of his or her life. There's quite a bit of research done in relation to how a newborn infant will look at the face of their mother or father intently for the first couple of days and then stop paying attention to it by virtue of the fact that they have become habituated to that particular face. It happens in the space of a few days. It is one of the primary and fundamental pillars of the way in which our brains evolved, that we don't need to pay attention to anything that we think we already know about. That's obviously the rock that most people perish on. It's the rock that those dietitians that I mentioned earlier on perish on daily by virtue of the fact that they end up eating the wrong foods again and again and again. And as I said, it isn't just that it's not helping them get better. It is actually enabling them get worse. In the same way that smoking every day is not so slowly killing you. Now, the other thing that, of course, that we are addicted to, that we are generally speaking unaware of, is stress. Most people are addicted to the cortisol that combines with adrenaline to keep us going every day. Now, there's a phrase. Isn't that an awful phrase? Are you enjoying your life? Are you living your life to the full? No, I keep going. That's not living. In the same way, as I said a few minutes ago, the normal crazy mind that is not all there is not living. In fact, it is missing one's life as one's life passes one by moment to moment. So, the way in which our brains evolved ensured that we learn the skill of habituation in the first couple of days of our lives. And it's all downhill from there, to be quite honest, because during the second and third year of our lives, we learn the programs to which we become habituated that enable us to behave or misbehave as adults 20, 30, 40 years later. And it's all happening automatically. And then somebody offers us a cigarette or a harder drug, or somebody gives us our first couple of drinks. And because everybody's doing it, it's okay. And we get into that habit and we become, as I said a few minutes ago, addicted. How do you give up smoking? Well, you just stop. If you feel like giving up drinking, and I'm not saying that alcohol is a bad thing, Alcohol is something that inevitably, we all know this, numbs the mind. Alcohol is fundamentally a depressant, but a little wash of your fancy never did you any harm. But therein lies the rub again in relation to alcohol, because many people cannot stop at a little of what they fancy. So if you feel you need to give up any bad habit, and you don't need me to tell you that you have bad habits, we all have bad habits. If you want to give up any bad habit, you simply decide to stop. Now, the slightly difficult word in that sentence was simply, because it obviously isn't quite that simple. Otherwise, nobody with a grain of common sense would be smoking. Nobody would be over drinking. Nobody would be addicted to pornography, for example, another more modern addiction, although maybe it's not that modern. Maybe it's just by virtue of the fact that it's so freely available at this stage that we assume that it is a modern addiction. But all these things come under the umbrella of habit. And the fact that we are habituated people as a result of the way in which our brains operate. In exactly the same way, when using our minds normally, we are addicted to the same way of thinking every day. We've talked before in these episodes about how the neural lab in UCLA has calculated that the normally minded individual is operating on automatic pilot every day by using 70,000 thoughts that whiz through the normally minded person's head during the course of their waking day. So we're not talking about 24 hours, we're talking about perhaps 16, 17 or 18 hours in which 70,000 thoughts randomly flipped through our head. They are not random thoughts. They might arise randomly, but they're not random. They are the same 70,000 thoughts that entertain us, and clearly that's not the right word, and have been entertaining us every day since we were 12 or 13 years old. They are the programs that the automatic pilot uses to enable us get by, get through one day, make it to the next day. These are the fundamental pillars of habituation. It isn't that people are addicted to cigarettes. It isn't that people are addicted to alcohol or drugs. It isn't that people are addicted to eating the wrong foods. It isn't that people are addicted to stress. It is that people are addicted to thought. Thought is the root of all evil. The repetitive, ruminative thought that runs through our heads every day. It is thought. It is habituated thought used by the automatic pilot that enables you lift up your packet of fags and light one up. Exactly the same way for all of the other addictions and bad habits that I've mentioned. It doesn't take 21 days to break a bad habit. The latest research from neuroscience would strongly suggest that it takes less than 5 days. If you've been listening to this podcast over the last couple of years, you will know that when we meditate, when we take charge of what is known in cognitive psychology as one's attentional spotlight, when we do that and when we restructure the attentional spotlight, we restructure the parts of our brain that make our decisions for us. Or let me put it more simply, that make our choices for us. In other words, do I choose to have a cigarette or a drink or not? When we are using our minds normally, the parts of our brain that make those decisions for us are disabled by virtue of the fact that the whole brain is running on automatic pilot, by virtue of the fact that, in fact, because the brain is running on automatic pilot, the so-called attentional spotlight in the left prefrontal cortex of the brain is actually disabled. Now, there are evolutionary reasons for that that we've discussed before that don't merit further investigation at this moment in time. But the point I'm making is that people's bad habits are as a result of automated thought, which are as a result of the brain's attentional spotlight being disabled, which happens as a result of the way in which our brains evolved. But as I said a minute ago, if you've been listening to this podcast, even sporadically over the last couple of years, you will know that when we start meditating, we engage the brain's attentional spotlight. We actually, as a result of regular meditation, restructure the brain's attentional spotlight, and we re-engage those parts of the brain that make our choices for us, to the point that they make our choices for us effortlessly. We don't have to think about whether we'll have a cigarette or have a drink or not. Our brain will make the choice for us. Let me go back to the couple of dietitians that I mentioned earlier on. Clients, people with whom I've worked over the years. One particular individual told me that when they did their weekly supermarket shop, they would automatically put all the bad stuff that they knew they shouldn't be eating into the trolley. After a few weeks of meditation, the same person told me that they would go through the supermarket aisles. They would go to take the bad stuff off the shelves and put it in their trolleys, and it was like somebody else was controlling their hand. They would move forward through the supermarket aisles, and the otherworldly control of their hand would take the good stuff off the shelves because their subcortical brain was starting to make moment-to-moment choices for it. You see, an awful lot of what we talk about in this podcast could be taken to be exploring the grand choices that we have to make in life, the big decisions that will change our lives. But what you put into you by way of food, alcohol or drugs is changing your life. And if you stop putting that in, that's going to change your life for the better. It's the little choices that we make that change our life. It's the little choices that, when we get them right, enable us to get to the point in our lives where we effortlessly have big choices to make, and we effortlessly make those big choices and get those big choices right. Why? Because we have restructured the key components of the subcortical brain as a result of regular meditation. Now, there's donkey's years of research at this stage in relation to how, over an 8-week period, somebody meditating regularly over that period will have restructured the left prefrontal cortex and restructured the insula, the amygdala, and the hippocampus in the subcortical brain, the parts of our brain that make our choices for us. All that research has been done by evaluating the changes in people's brains over an 8-week period, for the simple reason that originally, back in 1989, the first steps in Western psychology of managing our state of mind, introduced through the University of Massachusetts Medical School, when they unleashed upon a waiting world mindfulness-based stress reduction therapy. That mindfulness-based stress reduction therapy was put together in a program that lasted 8 weeks. That's the only reason that all the subsequent research, even up to now in neuroscience, has been based on this 8-week period. Science always follows science until, of course, there's a major breakthrough. And one of the major breakthroughs from the perspective of how our brains work has indeed been the neuroscience that I just mentioned. Back in the 1980s, in the University of Massachusetts Medical School, there was already a whole body of evidence in relation to how, for example, regular meditation over that 8-week period enhanced the recoverability of participants in that program who had been diagnosed with terminal cancer. The brain is almightily powerful. We've talked before about healthy mind, healthy body. Indeed, when I talked about dietitians a few minutes ago eating the wrong food and then making the right lifestyle choices to eat the right food, that's an example of healthy mind, healthy body. And indeed, if you decided to stop smoking, that again is a healthy mind, healthy body thing. I'll come back to healthy mind and healthy body in just a moment. But to get back to the point that I was making, in the 1980s, there was already buckets of evidence as to what meditation does to mind and to body. In the year 2000, it was discovered that people who use their minds in a particular way have different shaped brains to people who use their minds in a normal way. I won't go into the research at this stage, but it was groundbreaking. 2008, 2009 came along, and with advances in neuroscience, it was discovered what was happening while people were meditating, that they were in fact activating the attentional spotlight in the brain, that it was in fact having an impact on the subcortical decision-making parts of our doing brain. I've described the doing brain in many of these episodes before. And it's only over the last few years that neuroscience has discovered that through regular meditation, brain restructures itself in a way so that we stop paying attention to the 70,000 thoughts that habituate us. That is how you break a habit. You break a habit by coming into the here and now. This goes to the heart of how you stop doing things to yourself that are bad for you, whether it's an addiction or a simple bad habit. I'm not sure where the line is between those two things. We stop doing the wrong things by choosing to do the right thing and actually doing it. In other words, you can't choose to be in flow. You can't choose to be clear in your mind and focused. You can't choose to stop smoking unless you have already experienced what it is like to have chosen to stop thinking, or should I say, have chosen to experience what it is like to be fully present. This is the enormous benefit that meditation provides for us. And to come back and tie up in a neat bow the point that I was making a few minutes ago, the very latest research in neuroscience has shown that the brain will already have started to restructure itself through regular meditation in just 5 days. Now, I'm always a little bit coy in saying that to people, because people, being normal and crazy, will say, oh, so I just have to meditate for 5 days and my life will change. That isn't what I said. And you know that isn't what I said. But the amazing thing is that in just 5 days, you will already have started to make a personal evolutionary quantum leap. Because even after 5 days, your brain will be a different shape to the brain that evolution gave the human species on this planet. And that means that you can start making the right lifestyle choices. It means that, in fact, the right lifestyle choices will start being made for you, by you, effortlessly. It means that you will make the right choices in relation to what you eat and what you drink. More fundamentally, it will enable you to make the right choice moment to moment in relation to whether or not you're present or thinking. We talked about addiction to stress a few minutes ago. Stress is not something that happens here. Stress is not something that somebody else does to you. Stress is something that you choose for yourself. We're talking about lifestyle choice here. It is an automatic choice that is only made by a brain that's running on automatic. So all you have to do is disengage your automatic pilot so that you choose moment to moment to be present, not thinking. Because it is only thought that leads to stress. It is only thought that leads to, oh, I need another cigarette. It is only thought that leads to, I need to eat the wrong thing, or I need to go out and get drunk again with the lads or the girls, because I'm part of a herd, part of a tribe, and we're all happy together. Whether that's true or not is an entirely other conversation that we need to have. And indeed, a conversation that I have alluded to a couple of times in some of my Thursday morning videos recently. Just as an aside, if you're not getting those Thursday morning videos, well, that's a choice that you now need to make. You can choose to use the link in your podcast player to sign up for my weekly Thursday morning videos. There's 800 and I don't know how many of them there are at this stage. They go all the way back to December 2008. And every Thursday, you will get a video, a quick tip and a reflection and other couple of bits and pieces as well. All good stuff, because we all need to keep ourselves on our toes all the time. And while I'm on that particular subject, you could also use the other link in your podcast player to sign up for my free online training program that I'm running at the moment, a crash course, if you will, in taking control of your attentional spotlight, what we've been talking about during the course of this particular podcast. The key point in relation to everything that we've covered over the last 25 minutes or whatever it is that when we take charge of our state of mind, we start making the right lifestyle choices. We don't have to think about whether or not a decision is right or not. We just do it. It just happens for us because our brain is operating in an entirely different way. We start making the right lifestyle choices in relation to how we behave ourselves, what we eat, what we drink, because we are what we eat and what we drink. I mean, if you're not drinking enough water every day and the human body is made up of 80% water and you're not properly hydrating yourself, what effect is that going to have on your very being as a human being? More importantly, the more we take charge of our state of mind, the more we take control of our own health and well-being. I've said it before, you will have heard me say it before, that a mind that is ill at ease causes a body that is diseased. That is not a catchphrase. The World Health Organization will back me up with nearly 30 years of research in that regard. We know, and we've known for a long time, that most coronary or cardiac incidents are caused as a result of what's going on in the head. They're mainly stress related. Cancer is a lifestyle choice, believe it or not. In at least 90% of cases, cancer is a lifestyle choice. We'll come back to those issues at some point in the future, or maybe we won't, for the simple reason that what is the point in us investing our energy in things that we don't want to happen? That's what normal crazy people do. When they worry, they throw their energy into something that they don't want to happen. What's the point in our doing that when we could invest more and more of our energy in understanding how, when I take charge of my own state of mind, my energy, my actual physical energy flows, my body heals itself, and I start effortlessly, to use the word making is actually even making too much out of what actually just flows. I start making the right lifestyle choices and they just happen for me because my brain is operating in an entirely different way. In fact, it is operating in the way in which evolution enabled it to act only in life-threatening situations. Now, as a result of meditation, as a result of restructuring my attentional spotlight, as a result of its involvement in my life and its ability to restructure my subcortical brain, as a result of my restructuring the decision-making and choice-making apparatuses, that's probably not a word, of my brain, I'm suddenly living in a completely different way, and I'm actually living life to the full, and it is just happening for me because I am allowing it to happen by making the most fundamental lifestyle choice that we all need to make moment to moment every day. Am I present or am I thinking? Reflect on that. Am I present or am I thinking? Now, before we go, let me just elaborate on what I've just said, because it suggests that I need to make a choice moment to moment. I don't need to make a choice moment to moment. I need to train my mind to make the choice moment to moment for me. That is what meditation enables me to do because of the way in which it restructures the brain. So my morning meditation, my daily morning meditation, will restructure my brain. In the initial stages of my practice, I will probably need to keep myself on my toes a couple of times during the course of the day as well. I generally recommend to people that they mini-meditate half a dozen times during the course of the day. But what they find after a couple of weeks of doing that is that their mind starts self-checking itself, if I can put it like that. So that they find themselves, quote unquote, mini-meditating without actually choosing to mini-meditate. Why? Because the brain has begun to make the right lifestyle choices for you. The whole point is that this is down to you deciding to take control of your state of mind. You don't have to worry about whatever habits you want to stop. You don't have to worry about whatever addictions that you have been grappling with. You don't have to worry about anything. What you have to do is turn up to your life. As a result of turning up to your life, everything flows. And that is why so many people with whom I've worked over the years, or possibly almost all of the people with whom I've worked over the years, will tell me that the best things in life kind of then just happen for them. Or, there's another quote, they just fall into their lap. Now, of course, that is not to say that these things actually do just happen without us doing anything. This, above all else, is a call to action. But you see, the point is that when you're using your mind normally on automatic pilot, you're never acting, you're only reacting. We only start taking real action, which is lifestyle choices that we've been talking about here, when you take control of your state of mind. So the only thing, the only decision that you actually need to concern yourself with is, will I meditate this morning or not? Did I meditate this morning or not? Will I pause for a moment to smell the roses or smell the coffee now? In other words, will I pause for a moment to mini meditate? Will I experience my life now? That's the only choice I need to make. Your life's in your own hands. Your health is in your own hands. Your well-being is in your own hands. Your financial freedom is in your own hands. We've talked about that before. Everything is down to whether or not you are in control of your own state of mind. And we know from decades of research in cognitive psychology and 25 years research in the field of neuroscience, that the one and only way in which you can be sure that you can do that is through regular meditation. End of episode. You've been listening to Succeed, Just Let Go. To get involved, join me in my Facebook group, strangely enough called To Succeed, Just Let Go. And for more information, visit www.willie-horton.com.